Any and all views expressed on the Devil in the Details are entirely my own. While I am a member of the Church of Satan, I do not speak for the Church of Satan. The show where we talk about skepticism from a satanic perspective. I'm your host, the Satanic Skeptic. Once again, it's been a while since I've uploaded. I'm sorry to have kept you waiting. Before I dive into today's topic, though, I'd like to make a few announcements. First, everyone with an interest in the Satanic Panic, Repressed Memories, or if you've listened to my episode on Michelle Remembers, a documentary was released last year called Satan Wants You. It was made by these two guys from Victoria, British Columbia, Sean Horler and Steve Adams, and they did an excellent job of interviewing experts in relevant areas, people like Elizabeth Loftus, Ken Lanning, and the Church of Satan's own Magister Tremblay Rex, Blanche Barton, and we get to hear from people who've never before been able to tell their side of the story. Michelle Pazder's younger sister, Cheryl Proby Oustman, and Lawrence Pazder's ex-wife Marilyn and daughter Teresa. It's a really well-made documentary. It won the DGC Audience Award for Best Canadian Film, so go check it out. It's free on Tubi, or if you want, you can rent or buy it from YouTube. And while we're on the subject of film, the Sundance Film Festival will be showing a film, Realm of Satan, a, quote, experiential portrait depicting Satanists in both the everyday and in the extraordinary as they fight to preserve their lifestyle, magic, mystery, and misanthropy. If you can't make it to the festival, you can buy a ticket for online viewing between January 25th and 28th. Tickets are $25, so check it out. It sounds really cool. Last, but certainly not least, I teased a project I was working on with Magister Kevin Slaughter a few months back. That's still very much in the works. It's coming along, so I encourage you to check out his website, Underworld Amusements, and subscribe to keep up to date. Now then, this episode I want to talk about is a story that was brought to my attention. So there's a metaphysical supply store in Hanover, PA called the Serpent's Key that's become the center of attention after having been visited by the chief of Hanover Police. Why were they paid a visit, you ask? Well, apparently it's actually illegal in the state of Pennsylvania to tell fortunes for profit. That's right, fortune-telling as a business model is against the law. Now, Pennsylvania isn't the only state that has these kinds of laws. Oklahoma, Wisconsin, Minnesota, and North Carolina all have extant laws on the books criminalizing the practice. So, as you can imagine, these laws are quite old, with some having been passed in the mid to late 19th century, and for the most part, they're either unknown or obscure enough that they're ignored by both the public and the police. Sometimes, however, cases arise in which these antiquated laws are called into question. In the past several decades, a handful of cases have forced the courts to question whether these laws are constitutional in their intent to protect the public from fraud, or whether they infringe on the free exercise of a person's religion. So how did this come to be a problem in PA? Well, we're gonna find out. So like I said, the Serpent's Key is a metaphysical shop in Hanover, PA that's ran by Beck Lawrence, and on October 5th, 2023, Hanover Police Chief Chad Martin informed the Marketing, Events, and Development Coordinator for the nonprofit Merchant of Hanover, Noel Sosan, I hope I pronounced that right, that he would be paying a visit to Lawrence after seeing them in their shop featured in the Merchant. The exact nature of this visit is up for debate. Chief Martin refused Lawrence's request to record the conversation on their phone, a move which some courts may consider a violation of Lawrence's First Amendment rights, citing the precedent set by cases like Glick v. Cuniff and ACLU v. Alvarez. Both Lawrence and Chief Martin have given conflicting accounts as to what was discussed. Lawrence stated to Fox 43, he, meaning Chief Martin, basically just reiterated to me that he wasn't here to make an arrest at this time or press any charges. However, if he did get further reports or if he felt there was any need to investigate, he would be obliged to under the law, which I understand, while also telling WGAL 8 that they felt intimidated and like I'm being singled out and targeted when this is such a small percentage of what we do here, which by their estimates is about 20% of the shop's business. Meanwhile, in a post made to the Hanover Police's official Facebook page, Chief Martin clarified, "Upon observing the advertisement for a business in the borough of Hanover that offered tarot card readings, I engaged in a conversation with two individuals concerning the advertisement and my intent to educate the person, or persons, engaged in the acts about the above-listed statute. There was never an investigation, nor was there any threat of arrest in this matter." The statute in question, Pennsylvania Title 18, Section 7104, Fortune-Telling, dates back to 1861, and states, "A person is guilty of a misdemeanor of the third degree if he pretends for gain or lucre to tell fortunes or predict future events by cards, tokens, the inspection of the head or hands of any person, or by the age of anyone, or by consulting the movements of the heavenly bodies, or in any other manner, or for gain or lucre, pretends to effect any purpose by spells, charms, necromancy, or incantation, or advises the taking or administering of what are commonly called love powders or potions, or prepares the same to be taken or administered, or publishes by card, circular, sign, newspaper, or other means that he can predict future events, or for gain or lucre, pretends to enable anyone to get or to recover stolen property, or to tell where lost property is, or to stop bad luck, or to give good luck, or to put bad luck on a person or animal, or to stop or injure the business or health of a person or shorten his life, or to give success in business, enterprise, speculations, and games of chance, or to win the affection of a person, or to make one person marry another, or to induce a person to make or alter a will, or to tell where money or other property is hidden, or to tell where to dig for treasure, or to make a person to dispose of property in favor of another." The backlash to the actions of the Hanover police was both immediate and has been ongoing. From the time the police department made the first social media post on Facebook, members of the public began commenting on daily posts saying things like, "FYI, Wiccan is a religion, and last time I checked, freedom of religion means all of them, not just evangelical fascism." And, "Tarot reading is not fortune-telling. How about you concern yourself with actual crime instead of harassing a business owner over an archaic law?" As of December 8th, Beck Lawrence announced on their TikTok channel that they were suing the Hanover Police Department. Lawrence's lawyer, Alexa Gervasi, sent the police a letter on October 31st stating that if Chief Martin did not confirm by November 15th, the TikTok video was posted on November 16th, so it was after the fact, that the Hanover Police Department would not enforce the fortune-telling law, her office would proceed with filing a lawsuit for injunctive and declaratory relief to ensure that Lawrence and others may freely engage in this constitutionally protected activity. On what basis might Gervasi argue that her client's constitutional rights are being violated? How might fortune-telling be a constitutionally protected activity? Well, the most obvious strategy might be to argue that fortune-telling is protected under the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, which protects citizens' rights to practice their religion as they please, so long as the practice does not run afoul of public morals or there is a compelling government interest in criminalizing the practice. But does fortune-telling qualify as a religious practice? How might we make that determination? If we look at Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, we find that the United States government asserts that religious observances or practices include, for example, attending worship services, praying, wearing religious garb or symbols, displaying religious objects, adhering to certain dietary rules, proselytizing or other forms of religious expression, or refraining from certain activities. Whether a practice is religious depends on the employee's motivation. The same practice might be engaged in by one person for religious reasons, and by another person for purely secular reasons. For example, dietary restrictions, tattoos, etc. Fortune-telling is perhaps one of the oldest religious practices. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, evidence indicates that forms of fortune-telling were practiced in ancient China, Egypt, Chaldea, and Babylonia as long ago as 4000 BCE. However, given that the Civil Rights Act specifies that the same practice might be engaged in by one person for religious reasons and by another person for purely secular reasons, it's difficult to determine whether the tarot readings that Lawrence offers would be considered religious or secular in nature. Throughout the store, Lawrence has displayed several disclaimers which state, "For legal reasons, I must advise you that these readings are for entertainment purposes only." Additionally, Lawrence told Marshall Keeley of Fox 43 News that, with respect to their reading the tarot, "All of this is a metaphor, and it's about how this metaphor applies to your life and guides you through your life." Now, I actually made a trip to the Serpent Key to interview Beck Lawrence. And one of the questions that I asked them was, if you have people coming in to get a reading, and, you know, they ask you some of those kind of big, important questions, you know, how do you respond to them? And this is what they said.
Now, have you ever had anybody kind of ask, like, specific questions?
Hey, guys, how are you? Come on in.
You know, like, should I or shouldn't I do this, or...
Sure, you know, yeah, people ask me that all the time, but my answer is always, like, that's your free will. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you what to do or not. Have a good one. Thanks, you guys.
Okay.
So, yeah, and for, like, big questions, like, when people are like, hey, is my grandma gonna die? Like, I will just straight up tell you, I have no idea. Like, I've never...
Someday.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know, she's sick? Like, you know, there's only so much that I can do.
Right.
Lawrence might tell their customers that their readings are purely for entertainment, but it's not clear whether the motivation of the customer matters in this case. If a customer truly believes that tarot reading predicts the future or communicates some kind of spiritual message, does that make tarot reading a religious practice regardless of Lawrence's own statements and the disclaimer? Even if we grant that fortune-telling is a religious practice, is it reasonable to expect the courts to treat that as legitimate grounds for not enforcing bans on the practice? After all, just because something happens to be a religious practice doesn't mean we shouldn't challenge it, and as skeptics we want to protect the public from exploitation by psychics and mediums, right? This is where the question of free exercise versus public interest gets especially murky. The motivations for passing these laws in the first place were conflicted. As Professor of Law Victoria Sutton explains, the basis underlying prohibitory laws vary. For some, like the justice in California, fortune-telling was simply fraudulent, a scam aimed at the gullible and the desperate. Yet the charlatan is a charlatan not for the veracity of his beliefs, but whether he intends to defraud someone or not. For others, it was a dangerous deviation from accepted religious practices. Historically, if you look at the larger trend of court rulings in the United States in the past 100 years, there's been something of a shift away from criminalizing fortune-telling to ruling against prohibitory laws and statutes as unconstitutional. According to the Free Speech Center at Middle Tennessee State University, in the 1928 case of Davis v. Ohio, the Ohio State Supreme Court ruled against a religious-based defense of fortune-telling, citing the United States Supreme Court's earlier decision, Reynolds v. United States, that a federal law prohibiting the practice of polygamy did not violate the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment. Fast forward to 1998, in the case Argello v. City of Lincoln, the 8th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that a municipal ordinance banning fortune-telling for profit was invalid, as it could not be demonstrated to be supported by a compelling state interest. Now, you might argue, wait a minute, what about protecting the public from fraud? Shouldn't that be a compelling state interest? In the aforementioned case of Argello v. City of Lincoln, the Court of Appeals asserted that the First Amendment forbade government from arbitrating between fact and fiction, or to declare certain beliefs, for example, that someone can see into the future, forbidden. Citizens are at liberty to believe that the earth is flat, that magic is real, and that some people are prophets. Similarly, in the 1997 case Rushman v. City of Milwaukee, a federal district court in Wisconsin ruled that Milwaukee Ordinance No. 10616, which outlawed fortune-telling, including astrology, for either profit or for free, was unconstitutional. Much like with Argello v. City of Lincoln, the court concluded that the ordinance was not necessary to protect the public from fraud, because, first, the plaintiff in the case, Carol Rushman, gave advice which could neither be proven true nor false. Second, because predictions about future events are fraudulent only if the speaker knows of facts that will prevent the prediction from coming true, even if Rushman's predictions were false, they were not fraudulent. An interesting development in recent years has been the push to regulate the activities of fortune tellers based on professional speech doctrine. According to David L. Hudson, Jr., law professor at Belmont, a professional speech doctrine is a concept used more frequently by lower courts in recent years to define and often limit the free speech rights of professionals when rendering advice or counsel, for example, doctors or therapists. Now, the problem with this, in my opinion, is accountability. The courts may decide whether or not to treat the advice or predictions of fortune tellers as professional speech. However, I believe it's worth noting that a hallmark of professionals, doctors, therapists, psychiatrists, and the like, are credentials, review boards, institutions, and submissions to peer-reviewed journals by which they and their work can be held accountable. If a medical or psychological professional engages in fraud or malpractice, they risk not only legal action, but the revoking of their license and the ruin of their reputation. But what body or community will hold fortune tellers to similar standards? If the courts are going to treat the free speech of fortune tellers as protected under professional speech doctrine, we might reasonably demand that they be held to a similar accountability as other professionals. That said, I want to be very clear. I do not believe that fortune-telling ought to be criminalized per se. Fortune-telling for entertainment purposes is no more dangerous or criminal than going to see a mentalist or attending a séance. It can be good, clean fun. I would venture so far to say that even fortune-telling is a means of personal motivation. Asking questions of the cards and pondering an interpretation of their meaning as an answer is relatively harmless. It might not be the best means of looking for guidance, but I doubt it's any less helpful than praying, and no one would seriously advocate criminalizing that. Why should fortune-telling then be singled out as fraud? The real big fish we skeptics ought to focus on are the so-called psychics and mediums who charge fees for seemingly supernatural and paranormal activities. Psychics and mediums may make vague and nebulous claims similar to fortune-tellers. However, once they cross the line and begin claiming to possess knowledge or powers which are demonstrably true or false, I would argue concerns of fraud trump free speech objections. Simply put, making vague and very general claims probably isn't fraud because nothing of substance is really being said. There's no truth or falsity to these kinds of statements. However, if a psychic says that they have information regarding a missing person case, either they do or they don't. Either that information is accurate or it isn't. If a medium says they're receiving messages from someone's dead relative, either they are or they aren't. Telling someone, "You've drawn the Tower card, I see a major change coming in your life," says practically nothing at all. Telling someone their kidnapped daughter is out by the lake and claiming you can talk to someone's dead grandma are kind of a big deal. Lying about this kind of information, as in the infamous case of Sylvia Brown telling LaJuana Miller her daughter was dead, only for her to be later found alive, is kind of a big deal. These are the kind of people the public should be protected against. People who take others' money without coming up with the goods, and who waste precious police time, money, and resources. By contrast, fortune tellers with clearly displayed disclaimers who openly acknowledge their readings are metaphorical and they themselves are not prognosticators are not a threat. If you like this episode and want to hear more, you can check out The Devil in the Details on Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Podcast. You can manifest this episode into your podcast app of choice. If you want more satanic content straight from the devil themselves, check out these other podcasts, Satansplained by Magister Bill M on Spotify, and Demented One on YouTube. If you want to learn more about scientific skepticism, you can check out Squaring the Strange on Libsyn, Spooky Science Sisters, Skeptoid, and Holy Kool-Aid on YouTube is another really cool show. If you want to join the fight against misinformation and pseudoscience, and if you're listening to this podcast, you really should, I'd like to make a suggestion. Please consider donating to the Center for Inquiry, the parent organization for the magazine I write for, Skeptical Inquirer. You'll be supporting me and the channel by proxy. For just $5 a month, you can get advanced invitations to events hosted by the Center for Inquiry, pre-sale tickets and special discounts, and you'll receive the quarterly newsletter, Free Thought in Action. If you can spare $10 a month, you'll get all of the above, plus both a digital and print subscription to either magazine of your choice. Free Inquiry, the magazine for humanism, atheism, and all those living without religion, or Skeptical Inquirer, the magazine that I write for, which is committed to science, skepticism, and scientific investigation. If you have any questions or would like to shoot me a line, you can reach me on Facebook at The Devil in the Details, my handle is Satanic Skeptic, same on Instagram. Maybe consider subscribing to the podcast, liking the Facebook or Instagram page. You can also check out the articles that I write for Skeptical Inquirer at skepticalinquirer.org. And for more pop culture-related skepticism, you can look at AIPTComics.com. Until then, the devil of doubt calls forth mankind to challenge all things, question all things. May the Luciferian light of reason guide you on your way ever forward. Hail science, hail reason, hail Satan.